And good morning, folks, and welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. It is April 12th, 2025, and I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning.
And we've got an honorary ranch wrangler joining us this morning. We've got Josh on the line. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, men. We'll ask you, Will, if you'll go ahead and open us up with a word of prayer this morning.
Sure. Father God, we come before you as servants to your kingdom. We pray, Lord, that the Holy Spirit guides us through this morning's conversation and that our words be found pleasing to you. Lord, just as Proverbs 27 tells us that iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. We pray, Lord, that the remnant will be blessed, uplifted, and educated by this morning's conversation. We just pray that you'll be with us now, Lord, and forever. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, sir. Well, there is definitely a lot of stuff to talk about, and I don't know. I think that this morning we'll start off as, the talk of the town, the continuing on. I call it the economic war, is what this is turned into, from what I see, the U.S. versus a large part of the world, but specifically China. And one of the things that came across this week was China levies economic war against the U.S., brings global payment system online, bypassing SWIFT, selling oil with out U.S. dollars. And I was looking at that. That's a real big deal. That's something, and that happened rather quickly.
Yeah, they've kind of been playing with that whole deal on avoiding the SWIFT payment system as far as using dollars for that. I think that they've raised tariffs on U.S. imports to like 125% or something like that, and retaliating against our tariff hikes. The funny thing to me is I'm not sure exactly what we import to China that they don't use to build stuff that they import back to us. It's kind of a circular. Does that seem like that's hurting themselves? I mean, I know we send them, not to mention we feed a lot of them, and there's a lot of food that they purchase, quote unquote. I use that word very loosely because usually we pay for it, but it seems like kind of a circular thing to me sometimes. Doesn't it?
Well, yeah. And that SWIFT, I mean, the history on the SWIFT economic system, it was founded in 1973 in Brussels. 239 participating financial institutions from 15 countries. It was over 11,000 banks involved in it across 200 different countries. I mean, it's a big deal, and it's been around for a while. I mean, it's not something that just popped up recently. So bypassing that, 38% of global trade is conducted using that system, and just to flip the switch and say we're not using that system anymore. But a couple of things that are interesting about it. I mean, the trades, it used to take 3 to 5 days. Now it takes 7 seconds, and the fees were slashed by 98%. So it kind of makes sense that a lot of these countries and that they'd want to conduct business that way.
Well, no doubt.
Go ahead, Tim. We talk about getting back to sound money, and in some ways, I mean, if I understand correctly, and there's a lot there that I don't understand, I'd be the first to admit it. But you know, they're supposedly it's more of a gold-backed or a hard asset-backed system, so. You would think that if you were trying to get a sound money thing, and that's why it takes 7 seconds, maybe. I mean, I don't, you know, it's kind of a, like, well, that was quick and painless. I mean, it's done. That's my thought.
I don't know too much about this new system that's coming out of China, but does anybody know, is it tied with the BRICS nation? Because I know a couple of years ago, there was a lot of talk that those countries that make up the BRICS nation were trying to get the petrol dollar change from the U.S. dollar to something else, the Russian ruble or whatever.
And I think they almost got it done from what I remember.
They did, yeah. And that to me, this is kind of a continuation of that. This seems like it's done. It seems like that's what they're doing. And they're just doing it through a new global payment system, it sounds like.
Well, and in this article, they talk about a $6.4 trillion of global economy lost within 12 hours. Hong Kong led the losses with 13.2% drop, its worst day since 1997. You know, and you just, you know, and this is just me talking, but looking at this, and it's like, okay, did they lose that money? No. Did they ever have that money? It was either inflated or they just lost it because, I mean, because it's just a number on a computer. I mean, how do you know there's that many $6.4 trillion? It's not like you had that money in the bank, and then all of a sudden it's just gone.
Exactly.
It's not like you had that sitting there in gold or silver or anything tangible, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it vanished. It was. It just kind of shows you that how fake this economic system really is. I guess is what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it does.
Exactly. Who got paid that money? Did it show up in your bank account or in your neighbor's bank account? I mean, where did that, what happened to it? I mean, it was all this, we lost this much. It's kind of like saving money when something's on sale. You didn't really save $250 who you put back in your pocket. You just didn't spend $250, on that. It's like, I mean, I saved. Well, good for you, but you didn't really make anything off of it. If you did, you'd have professional people out there just going around buying things. I think one of the concerns by bankers right now, and this goes along with this, is this, they're talking about liquidity in our markets, and there's just this giant lack of liquidity. And it's like, for who? I mean, where is that? The word salads that they throw out there, they only care about their markets and their liquidity. And it really doesn't. Does that affect the fact the sun comes up in the morning or the fact that your garden grows or the fact that you move on? But it is sure going to put them in the ditch with a shovel in their hand, digging a ditch. And they don't like that at all. That's a real problem.
Well, I know that on our side, the liquidity, goes back to, or at least in part of, say, like myself, I'm investing in my 401k, building up this portfolio. And, if I need that money, I'm going to access that money. And I go there to get it, and talking about the fact that I'm going to not only pay the taxes on it that I didn't pay because it was pre-tax money, but also the penalties for pulling my money out before I'm 117 or whatever the age is now, that you can actually touch your money. And that's all debatable whether we should or should not be participating in that and everything else. But, the value didn't leave there, because it never was there to begin with. It's all just fake numbers, mm-hmm. Somebody pushing a button.
Yeah. So if you go to get your money out and then, it was pre-tax money put in there, and then you're going to take some of your money out and they're going to, let's say that they take 30% of it. Did you just lose 30% of, what was in there? No, it's just the way that they state the number. So that's what I think that the point is that we just don't know. It wasn't that, it's just a bunch of.
Well, I got one more thing before we move down the road on this, Jason. Of the past couple of Saturdays, we've talked about, things not happening on accident. There's strategy going on that behind the scenes. It's interesting to me. I mean, you stop and think about the infrastructure that has to be put in, the planning that for China to have this new global digital payment system that can do something in 7 seconds that used to take 3 to 5 days. Obviously, they've had this and they've just been waiting to drop it. And, what else is out there that's to come? And that's just kind of my thought on it is why now, and obviously they've had this. Why not? Why was it in effect a year ago?
I would have thought that we would have heard about this thing and it would have been talked about and tested, maybe put a beta program out there and done some testing on it, trying it, see how secure it is. That's the other thing. It's like, you don't just show up and it's a really good point. You just don't show up and have a brand new protocol for transferring trillions of dollars across the world and not knowing that it is 100% secure and safe and efficient, and that there's not some back doors that somebody's going to siphon off some money. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is going to take place. So, yeah, they've been working on it for a long time. I agree. That's a good point. That it's something that's been out there for a long time. They've had this in place. They've been waiting for it. And that's, it's kind of like, goes back to the point that it is an economic war that's taken place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and maybe the end game of the economic war is to put something like this in place, right? You got to have the chaos to have something to settle it down. Maybe that was the plan all along. Who knows?
Good point. Yeah. Well, another little thought that occurred to me over this is they're running a lot of this market manipulation through tariff escalation, de-escalation. Oh, we're going to pull back 90 days. Any idea how many billions of dollars on that your traders, that your those guys, you know, who don't have a dog in the fight except for whatever shares they bought or whatever, have made on that whole deal? If you knew that they were going to run a 90-day hold-off on that, and the stock market's going to jump back up, they want to talk about the money they lost. How about let's talk about the money they made on that, you know, as far as how much they made? Because if you have a little bit of information on how that's going to work, that's billions and billions of dollars that's rolling around there.
You know, Tim, I was talking to my 10-year-old son a few days ago about how the world works. And I was talking to him about magicians and sleight of hand, right? And, you know, the magician is, you know, got a spinning wheel in one hand because he wants you to focus on that, not what he's doing with the other hand. What you just said, I immediately thought of that is everyone's going to pay attention to the doom and the gloom and the negative, and they're not going to be paying attention to who's actually coming out to the good on this, the positive. And to me, it's just another magician's trick of we're going to focus on the doom and you're not going to know who's actually profiting from this.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, that's right. That's what it is.
Well, let's go to a different part of the world and switching gears. Economic freedom fighters, South Africa. Boy, it sounds like that they are just getting, well, it sounds like they're stealing more and more land from what I gather. And the way that they put it is they're obtaining farms without compensation. I think that that's the same thing as stealing, ain't it?
Seems that way.
Yeah, what do you know about that, Will?
The ANC, which is the prevailing Black Communist Party there, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, they actually got their constitution changed where it is now the law of the land in South Africa that it's expropriation without compensation is what they call it. And what you said, Jason, is really what it is. It's just stealing land from the white boers, the farmers, without paying them. And so that's what's happening right now. And the Economic Freedom Fighters is a political offshoot of the African National Congress. And they got a crazy man named Malema who heads up that party. And, I mean, he's being pretty open about it. And pretty much what he's saying is, well, here's a quote I just pulled up. It's the EFF goes into government. We expropriate farms and give them to the farm workers because no white man works on the farms. It's the Black people who are driving tractors, harvesting, and know how to work the land. We require no white supervision, and the farms need to be returned to the farm workers. Well, to me, maybe that's just bad choice of words because the farm workers never had the land. They never had the farms. So how can we return them to them? It's just simply stealing to give to them. And
how'd that work out for them last time? I mean, and how has that worked out for them in the past?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they take Whitey off the farm and they steal his land. They kill him. They kill his family. And then they starve to death because they don't know how to grow crops or run a farm or manage anything. I mean, basically, is what's happened.
I'm not going to argue with a guy. I do think they know how to work on the farm, but managing a farm is different than working on a farm.
Exactly.
You know, it occurred to me, and I was thinking about this, you know, knowing that this subject may come up, and I had to go back and find it, but I just wanted to say in the Pastor Pete series, Unseen War, Part 10, he drives down on the fact that the landlord, God, has basic laws that apply to the land, and the enemy understands the law, and they use them against white Christian civilization. And that, I just encourage people to go back and listen to that, because that's certainly what was coming in my mind this morning, is how the enemy can use our own laws against us. And that's just what I was thinking about that, Jason.
Yeah, perfect. And that makes a lot of sense. And we've seen that over and over again. I mean, And I think we talked about it last week about Balaam cursing Israel. He couldn't put a curse upon him, but he could get us to sin against our God and bring the wrath of God upon ourselves too. And I think that that ties in with exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's a real war that is taking place over there, and I mean that, you know, still in South Africa. They're saying basically there's a town of Kimberley that they're planning on, that they're saying that they're going to head to, and they want to wipe out. And that Kimberley is 50% children. Is that, do I understand that right?
Yeah, Kimberley is kind of like the county seat of this area. There's a settlement inside there called Orania, and it is a historic Afrikaner community. It's all white community. They've kind of separated themselves, I don't know, 20 or so years ago, and they're just a self-contained community. And this same group, the Economic Freedom Fighters, I think it's on the 22nd of this month. We should be praying for those people because they're amassing a tremendous amount of black Africans that they're going to march into Orania and to the county seat of Kimberley. And, I mean, they're not even trying to hide it. They're saying they're going to go in and cause havoc and remove these white people in this historic Orania community that they don't belong there. So we should be praying for those folks there in the Northern Cape, those Afrikaners for sure.
Yeah, we will definitely be keeping them in prayer. And hopefully we'll have some updates on that too. And we'll try to keep up on that and let you folks know what's going on over there. One of the things that, you know, that we've talked about, and I know that we're working on, and it's something that we're going to continue to work on and trying to give people updates on the war that is taking place over there in South Africa. But, you know, something that we've talked about, I don't know if we've actually talked about it on the air, but I know that me and Will and Tim have all talked about it off the air. Is that, you know, the hidden unseen hand of the Jews that are behind a lot of the genocide that's taken place over there. And there's a reason that we don't get a lot of news out of South Africa. And these Jewish powers, I believe, are secretly behind that genocide that's taken place over there. And it's I think it's largely because a lot of those people over there, or it's commonly known that those people are Israel. They're Israelites. I mean, they're our brothers and sisters. And I think that that's why that they really want them wiped out, is because they're not. I think it's taught in the churches, from what I understand over there. Isn't that correct?
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. It's fairly common that they know who they are. I would encourage people, if they haven't read up on the history of South Africa and really God's providence and intervention into those what they called voortrekkers, the original settlers that went in the 1600s, it's amazing how it parallels with the pilgrims who came to this continent, that those people were planted there for a reason. And, I mean, they were religious separatists, too, that left Holland in that area to go there, and they felt drawn there, that this is where God was settling them. And it's just their story is amazing, and it very much in many ways parallels what we saw here on this continent, that God's providence and his hands truly sheltered and protected them through starvation and hostile black tribes that came from the north to attack them. I mean, it's an amazing story.
Yeah, it really is. And there's just a lot of stuff that people really don't know about. I got an article in front of me, and I'll get this one posted up on the Newswire, and people can check it out later on today. I'll try to get it done as soon as we get off the air. But it is titled "The Hidden Jewish Hand in the Destruction of White South Africa," and it's a phenomenal read. So I'll get that posted up, and people can check that out by going to www.sfawbn.com and check that out later on.
This racial pot that is being stirred all the time is a weaponized, you know, ideology. I mean, when you look at that, you go back into that history, just like Will was talking about, and you look at the fact they carved those farms out of wilderness area. I mean, they did work that land in, but just like any other business that starts in somebody's basement or somebody's garage or on the corner of a piece of land, eventually they got to where they could hire people. And just because the people that they hired were black is an inconsequential, you know, ideal. I mean, they worked and everything, and now suddenly these people think that, you know, they're empowered or that they have the right to all that land because they worked on it. But it's like, well, if you receive your payment, it kind of goes back to that parable in the Bible where the vineyard dressers were hired. One was hired in the morning, one was hired at noon, one was hired late in the day and paid them all the same. And he said, I can, you know, you gave me your time. This was the agreement. We're even, you know. So that's kind of where we're at on this. They think they have some dog or some bone to pick or some dog in the fight. And it's like, no, the agreement was satisfied. You were paid, you know, and take your bitterness. And the Bible talks about them filling that cup of bitterness up, and then they're going to be made to drink it. And I think that we're seeing that cup filled, and they're going to have to drink it. It's coming.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Australian state could send Christians to jail if they pray for people with unwanted same-sex attractions.
That's a crazy headline.
Yeah. What do you know? And so, I don't know. I guess things are just nuts. That's New South Wales. I really didn't think that they had went that far, but wow, that's kind of interesting. Does anybody know anything about that?
Yeah, reading on it, there's actually the title of the law or name of the law is Conversion Practices Ban Act of 2024, and this, I guess, just went into on the books where it's been passed and adopted or whatever the first part of this month. And just a quick and short of it, as far as my understanding of it, is if you're a Christian or a church or whatever, and you pray for someone who is a sodomite or suffers from gender dysphoria, then you've committed a crime because that's considered to be conversion of those people. And I don't think it's their spiritual conversion. I think it's talking about the conversion of their sickness, but I don't even really have words for that. How have we gotten to this point where, I mean, to me, it's another way of just saying they've outlawed prayer. They've made prayer illegal. Because when you start defining how you pray, who you pray for, and what you pray for, and you start breaking that apart, you might as well just call it what it is. It's just a prohibition on prayer. And what I can't find in this, Jason, is I don't think this is necessarily talking about, like, public prayer or prayer in the open that could be heard by other ears. It just seems like it's any prayer.
That's what I gathered. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if someone that's a practicing homosexual comes to you and says, hey, I want you to pray for me, and you sit down with them and pray, I think you've committed a crime in New South Wales. That's the way I understand it.
Yeah, and I think I think it passed in 2024 too, so it's something that didn't happen just recently. And it became law. And I mean, okay, so how does that work? It's like, okay, so I think somebody, like, you know, I decided that I wasn't going to be a homosexual, and maybe somebody prayed for me, and I suspect that person, you know, prayed for me. It's like, seriously, I mean, let's think about this. How do they charge somebody? I mean, it's like, you know,
what you're looking at. I mean, if I wanted to trap you, I would just ask you to pray for me. And when you did, you're a criminal, you know.
I think that
would technically outlaw probably, you know, even the Lord's Prayer. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I mean, it's you pray that because we know who our God is, and we know that he only has that he created two genders. It's plain and simple. So we've got two genders. His will be done. I would say that outlaws the Lord's Prayer in South Wales.
Yeah, great point, Jason.
Yeah. Well, and one quote out of the article I was looking at was it was ratified on April 4th, and it said, raising alarm among Christians who, quote, by merely explaining the good news of Jesus, his power to heal, the immutable definition of marriage, or timeless truths about the complementarity of man and woman, risk being punished as criminals in New South Wales, So it's a thought crime. I mean, basically, it's like at some point there, you could basically say if you ask someone if they're a Christian, then they're guilty of a crime because the Christian faith seeks the conversion of, you know, Christ died for, you know, the world. He came for the world to redeem it and to bring these good news, this truth out there and the practice of the way. So basically, if you're a Christian, you're automatically a criminal. I mean, that's my take on it.
But if we're praying for these queers and these transitioning in New South Wales, but we're in the United States or we're in Canada or we're in South Africa, is that like a terrorist attack then coming in from from another country?
Jason, don't give them any ideas, dude.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it already is happening because right now in Britain, if you go over there to the United Kingdom currently, you can be placed under arrest for things that you posted in the United States as regards you've broken their laws regarding, speaking out on COVID or speaking out on any of those other things. They can arrest you as soon as you show up there for things that you wrote in your own country.
Tim, don't they have some no travel or like travel bans on people that have been identified like in the States for what they've posted online, that those people are not allowed inside England?
I heard something similar to that too. Yeah, basically,
okay.
It's like, but you can be incarcerated or you will be picked up at the airport. You show up there. I don't think I'm planning on going to UK anytime soon. So, that's kind of the way it is.
Yeah, I'm going to start my own do not fly list and do not fly here.
Self-imposed.
Yeah, exactly. Might not be good for my health. Okay, moving on. U.S. deploys a third of its stealth bomber fleet for possible Iran strike. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, and it's made national news now. Know about that?
Well, just that they have reassigned that the B-2 fleet, and it's in a state of preparedness. And I know that there's been a lot of saber rattling going on by the administration as far as Iran not allowed to create or have nuclear bombs. And my personal opinion is it's probably too late for that already, but that's not the gist of it here. But again, you're back to that hidden hand of the Israelis in there. I think that kind of ties into that. We've got a lot of things going on over there that are, and you know, Iran is Persia. I mean, it's always funny to me when I look back because we're talking about racial characteristics of different areas over there, but Iran was basically a white country. I mean, Iraq's not. Iran is. There's these things, and they've been a lot of Muslim activity and a lot of conversion factors over there that really changed it in the last. If you go back to the 70s and look at Iran, it was a totally different landscape of people over there than it is today. So you go back and look at the Shah of Iran, who was pro-American. We had a very forward-thinking group of people over there. They were, I don't know if I want to use the word westernized, but they were progressive as far as Christian idealism and policy and everything else went. And today it is absolutely 100% reversed from that. They kill Christians. They incarcerate people. They, there's a lot of downside to what's going on over there. So we'll see what happens. It's definitely at a height state of issue over there as far as what's going to go on, and whether there's going to be a bombing situation. I don't know. That's,
you know, Tim, to just prove that nothing's new under the sun, what you just described, that during the 70s that was going on inside Iran, you know, with it being a Persian nation and more of a white nation and definitely more progressive when it comes to Western ideas, you know, the powers that be couldn't have that. And we see the fruit of that now. If we stop and think, that's pretty much what just happened in Syria over the last couple of months.
Yes.
That, you know, the same type of revolution that happened 50 years ago in Iran, it's going on as we speak in Syria, where they took a progressive, at least Western educated, Westernized leader in Assad and, booted him out. And now we see what's going on there now with the purging of the Christians and the Alawites there. So just bringing that full circle.
Exactly. It's a good point. And that's their modus operandi. You know, I mean, that's the way they seem to work it.
Just remember, to have wars and rumors of wars, you got to have enemy combatants. And that's what those folks are good for. They've never met someone they don't want to go to war with, including each other. So it's
I heard somebody say, well, you know, the sandbox over there, they've been fighting forever. So it's like, yes, that's very true.
True statement. Yeah.
All right, switching gears, national news. Department of Homeland Security, let's go over to this. 985,000, nearly a million migrants that entered under the Obama administration are basically going to be deported. They're getting their status revoked. We're talking about, you know, and it's kind of funny. I mean, I don't know if funny is the right word or not, but it's interesting because, you know, we've had these Venezuelans, these Venezuelan gangs, these Nicaraguans, you know, the people that people were up in arms about, you know, they're grilling their, you know, their pets, eating people's dogs and cats and stuff. These kind of people, the people that everybody wanted to get rid of. Okay, so they're headed home. We're getting rid of them. And now people are up in arms, and it's all you hear is the screams and the cries of, you know, how horrible this is. It is, you know, I guess that's just the way that it works, but it's... they are headed home. They're losing their status, headed home. And I mean, I was just thinking about that, is like the logistics of moving a million people, you know, finding them, tracking them down, getting them out of the country back to their home countries, Venezuela, Nicaragua, different countries. That takes a lot of resources.
You know, something that came to me, Jason, on these tariffs that we're seeing, you know, different countries, their tariffs, you know, Trump had said it's going to be whatever, 1,000%. And then a few days later, it goes, now it's only going to be 10%. I think some of that is being leveraged to have these countries that have sent their rejects to us to repatriate them and to flip the bill that, you know, we're going to lower these tariffs and not declare economic war on you, but the exchange is you have to take your people back. So I don't know how that looks logistically.
Okay.
Just something to think about.
Yeah. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That makes a lot of sense. I think that that's very possible.
Yeah, there's also a big movement on called reverse immigration, and they're actually having some conflicts and issues at the border with people going back across the border out of the U.S. back. At least this is what I'm seeing. So it's like
we don't want them. We got rid of them. They were a murderer. That's a rapist. That's you know, we kicked them out of our country for a reason. Well, and a lot of them, I mean, it was either they were in prison when they emptied out the prisons. I mean, a lot of these dudes were bad dudes, and they were locked up, and they emptied the prisons out, and they sent them over here. And you think about it, it's like, yeah, they didn't want to pay to, you know, rehabilitate them. They didn't want to pay to keep them incarcerated. I mean, it's like, what's it? I don't even know. I know years ago it was, they said in the United States to keep somebody incarcerated, it was $100,000 a year. That's what it cost, the taxpayers to keep one person incarcerated. And over there, I mean, I don't know how much it cost, but it was costing them a lot of money. And that's why, you know, it to me, it was an act of war, but also because they don't want to flip the bill for keeping them in prison.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and it also stabilizes us and our economy. I mean, as soon as you shut the money off to them, what are they going to do? I mean, you know, it's like, now we're not feeding you, we're not doing your health care, we're not going to give you credit cards and phones, you know. So you want to go home, you want to stay here, you're not staying here. So it's like limited options.
You know, Tim mentioned the phones. I just want to throw that in there, Jason. You know, everybody raised Cain about these, you know, phones being passed out to these illegals as they were coming across. This was obviously under the Biden administration, you know, that was uploaded with this app that had been created by Border Patrol, and it gave them the access to all these resources and that sort of thing. That's being used the other way now, where we know they have all these phones all across America. Now they're receiving essentially text messages saying, we know where you're at and we're coming. You need to self-deport. Obviously you can throw a phone in the trash, but that is what's happening right now, that they're using that. What was being used for evil is being used for good, I guess. If you want to look at it that way,
we know where you are. We're coming for you.
We're coming for you.
We're here to help. we're here to help. You're going away. Well, and I think that's interesting and significant in that one of the things I had, and this is a little bit jumped sideways, but still along the same lines, is the fact that, you know, lately there's a great deal of fraud going on in the United States. And most of that is actually outside of our country. But, you know, they're using this data. I mean, they're always asking. That's one of those words that shows up all the time in the the tech articles, right? Data, data, data. You know, we need more data. We need more. We want to know your. And they want to know everything about you. You know, they want your cell phone number. They want your email address. They want your physical address. There's so much information. And it's always like, well, this is to keep you safe. But the more they keep us safe, the frauds across the country in regards to that just continue to go up. I mean, huge, huge amounts of money that America's have lost a total now of $5.7 billion in like the last year as a result of, what do you want to call it? Electronic fraud, I guess you'd call it. But it's like, so the safer they keep you, the less safe you are.
Just a quick public service announcement there for everybody listening, because I know we have a lot of older folks that's on the ministry that listen in. And keep in mind, if someone contacts you, I guess keep in mind if it sounds too good to be true, that's because it's not. And don't get taken in by these folks, because there's people all across this world that are using electronic means to try to swindle folks out of their money. And just be wise and understand that you know, we shouldn't practice those things. Let's not fall into the traps of the enemy, because that's certainly what that is.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. And that was something that I was going to say, too, because this last week I was helping a lady, an elderly woman, and, you know, basically she had her bank account completely cleaned out, $63,000 that was stolen from her. The credit card company, or it wasn't even the credit card companies, but it was, and it was one of these things. It was calling saying that there was a problem with your account. We need your, you know, this information, that information, and basically figured out how much money was in there, wired it out of her account. Bank's not doing anything to help her. She's been in contact with the FBI, the sheriff's department, the police department, everybody, you know, everything, trying to track down what happened. Basically, they're telling her, no, this is a big nationwide scam. It's happening all over the place. There's nothing that we can do. We can't track these. It's out of the country. Your money's gone. And I wanted to, and it's something I'm glad you brought it up, because I want to tell people, it's like, you don't trust anybody. I mean, you can hang up on him. You can call your local bank if there is a problem with something. Don't give out any information whatsoever to anybody that is calling you saying that there's a problem, whether it's, you know, from your Amazon account to your credit card account to anything. Zero. Just don't give them any information. That is the best policy as far as I'm concerned. And I was helping another person a couple weeks ago with kind of the same situation. They called up and said, hey, Jason, I need some help with this. I can't figure this out. Can you help me with this? And was able to help them figure out what they needed to do and stuff. But it was both situations, and I'm not knocking anybody. I'm not saying anybody was stupid or anything like that. It was just, you know, it's something. It sounded good, and that is the MO of the enemy, is to make them think that there's a problem and they're trying to help, and they come in and, you know, being a beacon of light, you know, somebody that wants to help them, wants to save their money, wants to do this, wants to do that, and it's just a bad deal. So just don't trust anybody that's calling you up saying that, even if they've got a lot of your information. Don't trust them. Make sure that you know, call your local bank or your institution directly, and I think that's the best way to handle it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and it's okay not to answer the phone. If it's a number you don't know, if it's somebody you don't know, you don't have to answer the phone. I know a lot of older folks really feel obligated when the phone rings to answer it, even though it's somebody they don't recognize. If it's an unfamiliar number, if it's not something that you're, you know, somebody that you deal with or that you operate with on a regular basis, you don't have to answer the phone. It's not a leash.
I've gotten,
you know,
the same way with that. You're exactly right. That's the way I operate. You hate it, you know, but if somebody wants you, they can leave you a message. And you know, if it's somebody you know or you got business with, that's one thing. But I feel like they're even recording your voice whenever you're talking to them, using that against you.
Yes,
I I don't even answer the phone anymore if it's the number that I don't recognize.
Yep.
And so you're talking about the money being stolen. Back to the idea of, was the money ever even there? And we really need to take a good look at the way we view our assets and money and, you know, the banks and all that, how we manage our wealth. In general, because if you don't have it and it's not something that you can touch, is it really there?
True advice.
Well, it's always amazing to me, and it's just kind of just one of those for free things, but you know, somehow these hucksters can go in and pull all the money, just like this lady that Jason was talking about. They can pull all her money out. You ever go down and try to pull money out of your account to the tune of $60,000? You know, they just look at, well, we can't do that. How come they can do it? I mean, it's my money. You know, why can't I get it? You know, I mean, but they treat you like you're, you know, something. You're trying to pull something. But how did they get it, but I can't? So,
yeah, you know, a couple years ago, I was buying a trailer, and I went down to the bank, and it was like, I mean, talk about the third degree, wanted to know what I was going to do with my money. It's like, and I wasn't very nice to the guy. I'm like, hey, it's my money. I can do whatever I want with it. And, you know, it was it's like, and I've wondered that too. It's like, it's so hard for me to get money out of my account that I put in there. Then these people know me at the bank. How is it so easy for some Haji to call up or to do it over the phone or do it on the computer?
And there's an ever-changing dollar figure that raises all these alerts and this and that, and you got to wait to get your own money, but yet somebody else can access it.
Yeah. Well, they're continuing on. We're going to switch gears. Gun control, ammo control. You know, these Democrats, they're just they're going to keep fighting. Fighting us on that. And this new one over there in New York, New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed a multiple gun control measures on Thursday. One piece of legislation strengthening a previous bill that requires credit and debit card issuers to track sales at firearms and ammunition retailers. And it says, quote, "We're taking action to drive down gun violence in the state of New York, protecting our communities and making our streets safer. Public safety is my number one priority, and by giving law enforcement additional tools to stop gun violence in its tracks, we're building on our promise to put the safety of New Yorkers first," she added. So this bill, from what I understand, it gives law enforcement the ability to track anybody that uses a credit card or a debit card at a gun store or online ammunition sale or firearms, because they want to keep track of the people that are hoarding ammunition. It's insanity.
There's a quote from the governor in that article that says it gives law enforcement the opportunity to find out exactly who may be stockpiling ammunition, and this is an indicator to something toward what could be happening, and it's an important data point for us to have, and that goes right to what Tim and Josh were talking about as far as capturing all the data they can. For what use? I mean, you know, we can only speculate, but I mean, she's not lying. She came right out and told you in the quote that that's what this is about, is capturing the data for something that hasn't happened yet. And just, you know, a little comment on that is there used to be a saying that said, you know, in God we trust, all others pay cash. And when it comes to these bastards, I don't think I would use my credit card. I think I would just use cash as much as possible.
Yeah, well, and my thought is okay, how do they know that if I'm buying, they make it sound like anybody that's buying ammunition or guns is a bad guy. And it's like, okay, what if I'm not a bad guy? What if I'm not using this to stockpile ammo to go out and commit crimes on the street? But what if I'm stockpiling this to protect myself against the bad guys? What are they going to go door to door and interview people and say, okay, we realize that you bought 1,000 rounds of 9mm. Now, are you going to use that for good or are you going to use that for bad? I mean, you know, okay, what are they going to do? I mean, seriously.
Put this full circle and think about South Africa and what we were talking about with all those guys marching on these all-white communities and that sort of thing, and kind of look at it through the perspective of incrementalism. And what they're doing here is saying this isn't a crime in itself to stockpile, but they're collecting the data on something that could happen in the future. So think about if this thing, and for all I know, the same law's already in South Africa, that if you end up shooting some guy because they're coming to wreak havoc on your family and your farm, well, we had this data point saying that he was stockpiling, so obviously he was premeditated.
It was premeditated.
It was premeditated. And to me, that's what I look at. I'm trying to look through the doublespeak of all of this. Is they're not coming out and saying this is an outright crime. They're just saying if something happens in the future, this is going to be a mitigating circumstance that they're going to use against you.
Yeah, it's
so
a future.
That information is out there, it's not going away. There's no thing.
That's right.
And and how many times do we hear about information breaches? So who'll have access to it? Pretty much whoever wants it.
Yeah, well, and I want to encourage people, too, is, you know, don't feel like you're obligated to answer questions. You know, if you ever find yourself in that position where somebody comes to your door and you hear that knock, do you have a stockpile of ammunition? Do you have guns? I don't answer questions. That is a very good response. You know, make them do their work. If they need a court order or something like that, just, you know, a lot of people think, well, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm going to explain it. They're going to understand it. No, they're there to gather information. They're doing an investigation, and nothing that you say is going to be used in your favor the way that you think it is. And people just need to think about that. I mean, it's, you know, just shut up. Be quiet. That is, I believe that's, and that's the way that I've watched a lot of stuff. I've read a lot of stuff. And I think that that is the best way to stay out of trouble is don't answer questions. I don't answer questions.
Yeah. Be cordial. Go ahead, Tim.
The right to privacy is normal. It's okay to have your own private life, and you don't owe anybody an explanation of a normal privacy or of a normal. I mean, that's a God-given right. A lot of the older generation has that issue again. I don't have anything to hide. I'm open. I'm honest. And to their benefit, good for them. But times they are a changing, you know. And sometimes it's like, I don't want to talk to you. So
I was just thinking about that. You know, who gets to write the definition of stockpiling? Some people having 100 rounds of 9mm would be stockpiling. You know, why would anybody possibly need that to defend themselves?
Yeah. Anyway, I know that they're just doing, I mean, and it's varying state to state on what they're trying to do as far as this gun, these gun laws and stuff. They got stuff that they've been passing in Colorado like crazy, trying to passing. I don't know. And so much, it gets confusing on what is actually law and what isn't. And, you know, then you get these judges that put these injunctions against stuff and they ban this. And, you know, I don't even know. It's like, so the pistol braces that they were outlawed for a while, but now that they're legal again, from what I understand, is that correct?
More or less. I mean, there's still some state conflagrations as regards that from state to state, but federally, it sounds like they've ruled on them being exempt. At least that's okay. The way I understand it. I'm not an attorney, so, you know.
Right, yeah.
On the other thing, Bondi has put together a Second Amendment task force that has some interesting promise. You know, I always say that reservedly because you never know how these things are going to go. You know, the problem with any group of government force is the fact that it can be missteered, misguided, or misdirected, or used to the detriment of those people. But I hope that really makes a difference. It sounds like it's going to. That's my opinion on it. I mean, so we'll see. We'll pray about it.
Yeah, and kind of like what we were talking about over there in New South Wales, here in Colorado, they got this Kelly's Loving Act that they're trying to get passed, and it's a Colorado bill that could strip parents of custody for misgendering their children. And it says, quote, Colorado's Kelly's Loving Act could allow the state to revoke custody from parents who misgender their children by defining its coercive control. The bill has passed the Colorado House and is now headed to the Democratic majority Senate before potentially reaching the governor's desk. Similar legislation is in Canada, has resulted in severe penalties, including imprisonment for a father who misgendered his daughter. So I mean, I don't even know how this works. If, you know, if we've got an executive order that says that there's only two genders, and is it basically, what are they talking about? Is a boy that says, no, I'm a girl, or a girl that says, no, I'm a boy? I mean, is that what they're talking about? I mean,
yeah, 1984 doublespeak much? I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, could it be, you know, it depends on which side of the fence you're on, whether you're on God's side of the fence.
You can hear that. Both ways.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, I'm just saying, agreeing, you could hear that both ways, or whatever your definition of misgender is.
Right.
If Sammy's wanting to be Sally, or Sally, just the fact that it could be in flow.
Exactly. Does it need to be there? And I think that's an issue, the ambiguity of the fact that we have so many rules out there that are just, to put it plain, dumb. I mean, why do we, it's like, it's a boy, it's a girl. If you're misgendering your actual son and trying to make him a daughter, then you're an idiot, you know, and, you know, maybe you are too dumb to have children. But on the other hand, you know, if your child is doing that, it says foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. So that's a parent's job, is to protect them not only from the other, you know, monsters that are running around out there, but even to protect them from themselves. That's your job, you know, according to God's word.
Yeah. Street takeovers in Portland. This was, Portland wasn't Portland the area that just not that long ago, they didn't want to have any police officers, and they legalized all the drugs, and basically, I think that they went to the point, from what I understand, and I'm pretty sure it's accurate, is that they were even passing out needles so that the druggies that wanted to shoot up their heroin and other drugs, they they could do it with a clean needle. And set up huts. I'd seen pictures of, places where they could go in, and, you know, safe zones where they could go do their drugs as they please. And they, you know, definitely one of the sanctuary cities, but basically kicked the police out. And, you know, now they're complaining that, they're taking over the streets and they're doing this and that, and we don't have the police to do any crowd control.
Yeah, I saw that story, and there was a police response, and to my understanding is what they ended up doing was setting up a perimeter so that the people that took over the street would be safe. And they didn't intervene. They didn't try to shut it down, and it went on for about 4 hours. Just there on some street in Portland, and they were just raising cane and creating chaos, and the cops stood by and provided a safe zone for them.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. It's like, okay, this is interesting, but the police spokesperson, they were sure unhappy about it. They were complaining about it, and it's like, how can you have? I mean, seriously, how can you have it both ways? You don't want the cops, but you do want the cops. You want lawlessness, but then you want law and order. I guess it is insanity, you know, except in the, you know, those both is one. They just want to be basically a dictatorship. It's, we don't want this, but we do want this, you know. It's just insanity, I think, is what it boils down to. Insanity.
Absolutely. They want their kind of communism. Who are they? Mm-hmm. Who are they keeping them safe from? You know.
Right.
So.
Now, remember, this is the same city that during the George Floyd riots, they let them take over. I can't remember what it was, 12 square blocks or whatever.
Yeah.
And the terrorists that took them over told, you know, City Hall or whomever, you know, this is a no-go zone for y'all. Y'all can't come intervene. And what did they do? They didn't go intervene. They just let them have their own no-go zone. So nothing new there. It's crazy. It's insane, Jason. You're right. Insane.
Well, and one of my good friends, his brother lived out there in that area, and he ended up packing up, selling his house, and moving out of there during that period of time, because his good friend was driving a garbage truck down in that area, and just driving a garbage truck down there picking up trash. Portland's a big city. They got to haul their trash quite a ways out of the city limits to where the landfill is. And he's driving down there trying to pick up their trash, and somebody just pulls out a gun and shoots him while he's driving the garbage truck, and killed him. And, it was, I mean, And there was just no, they didn't care. They didn't want to do anything about it. They weren't worried about it. They weren't worried about the guy. They talked to the guy that did it. And, you know, he just did it because, you know, that's what he felt like doing. There was, you know, the garbage truck driver wasn't doing anything wrong. He wasn't harassing him. He wasn't, you know, he didn't like the way that he looked at him. So he shot him and killed him. And they just turned a blind eye to it. You know, he went back into that, you know, he was one of those guys that was living in that 12 blocks where no law enforcement went, and that was it. So there was a lot of people that made an exodus out of that area during COVID and during those riot times, because it got really bad out there.
Yeah, and you can argue the point, well, this is my right to live here or to be here. It's my right to go buy as much ammunition on my debit card. You know, you could, but there also is a point where, you know, God gives ability to have sound judgment. And like for us down south, we just know that, you know, in South Louisiana, that New Orleans is not somewhere that you really want to be at night. And anytime you go there at night, you're taking a chance daytime as well, but more so at night. You know, anytime you go down there, you're taking a chance. I'm not saying you can't, but there's an amount of risk that's associated with that. And we just encourage people to, you know, to be wise in everything you do, just to think about it. And are there any precautions that you could make that not saying that is or is not infringement on your liberty or what have you, but there's things you can do to be smarter, you know, and not be found in the situation of being in New Orleans down on Barber Street at night. If you're not down there, you're probably not going to get shot down there. I guess you can argue the point, but wisdom.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a life factor. I mean, really, it's like anything when you're working, you know, in trades or something, it's like, we always have this pinch point rule, you know. It's like, stay out of the pinch points. I mean, you can go in there if you want to, but if something happens, it's over for you, you know. And it's kind of the same way. Smart guys that live a long time don't do stuff like that. Keep your fingers away from the saw blade. Those are all, you know, it's the same principle, right?
Yeah, good point. Well, and moving on, I was really encouraged by this one, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, when we see stuff like this about what we're about to talk about, you know, encourage people, keep this in prayers. This is something that we've been fighting for a long time. And this one reads, RFK says, quote, by September, we will know what causes the autism epidemic. And autism isn't, you know, an epidemic. It's skyrocketed here in the United States. A lot of other countries don't have it. We know a lot of things about it, but I'm just hoping and praying that a lot of this stuff, that these deeds that have been done in darkness, will be brought to light, and that a lot of these pharmaceutical, these drug companies, these doctors are exposed for their participation in it.
Yeah, we need to pray for the ones that are bringing it into the open, right? Because don't think that's a popular position to be at either.
Yes, exactly. No, I mean, you're talking about fighting doctors and hospitals and everything, drug companies that have been covering up, that, you know, have billions, have created a billion, multi-billion dollar industry, and created a bunch of cash cows the way that they look at them. And, you know, anybody that's exposing that and trying to bring that stuff to light, you just put a big target on their head. So definitely need to.
That's an act of war.
Good point. Yes. And, you know, then moving on, FDA admits COVID vaccine shedding is real. That's good news. That's interesting. We knew that, of course, and we've talked about it for, you know, quite some time. But for the FDA to admit it, that's they must be getting some heat from somewhere.
I think they're getting heat from RFK Jr.
I think so, too.
I think the man told us, you know, as far as, you know, make America healthy again, and he had a clear set of things that he was going to do. And I think he told President Trump, you know, buckle up, because if you name me to this, this is what I'm going to do. And I think he's been given the reins to do it. And sure seems like the guy, you know, just talking about the autism and now this stuff, I think he's just unscrewing the lid. And kind of like what Josh said, I mean, I personally pray for Robert Kennedy Jr. because, you know, he had an uncle that started saying things that the establishment didn't care for, and we saw what happened with him, and the same thing with his father. And we should be in prayer for this man, because all of the things, you know, we've griped over the years, and we've this ministry and people like us have talked about the dangers of vaccines and what Big Pharma is doing to us as far as destroying our health. And, you know, we were on the fringe. Now we have somebody that is mainstream, that is saying the same things that we've said over these years. And, you know, he's championing. We may not agree with everything that the guy stands for, but he certainly, in this aspect, is talking like us. And we definitely need to be in prayer for that guy.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Encourage people to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And it is interesting along the same lines is Pennsylvania, I think it was Florida, there were several different states, AG, are currently looking to prosecute Fauci and several of the other leaders of that. They're currently and actively bringing charges at this particular time for malfeasance and a lot of other things as regards this vaccine pandemic situation there. And it doesn't seem like it's getting a lot of traction in the, what do you want to call it, national news, but they'd rather not talk about it. But it is happening. And I think that, you know, it's very... It's about time, you know, and that's, you know, there needs to be some outcry on that, because there was a lot of malfeasance involved in that whole deal. And I mean, we talked about it in depth and in as much detail as we could get, but it was so broad and so huge, and the money grab and the power grab and the destruction of families and family lives, you know, it just went on all the way across the board. So there we go. It's all coming out.
Yep. Before we transition on that, Jason, just this week as well with Robert Kennedy Jr., he had an interview with Newsweek, and something that I consider major. You know, we've already seen some of the states doing this and some local jurisdictions, but RFK Jr. announced through Newsweek this week that the Center for Disease Control official policy now is they're going to be urging water distribution sites all across the country to end the fluoridation of water, that it will become the policy of Health and Human Services and the CDC to no longer fluoridate water. And I look at that,
praise God.
I mean, this is something that I didn't think we would see, but here we are, right? That this guy's up there doing exactly what he told us he was going to do. And let's just hope that comes to fruition.
Yeah, and I say, let them be caught in their plots. Those that have been trying to poison us for so long, I mean, you think about how many people and how many people's lives have been affected by fluoride, how they've affected, you know, our nation. I remember talking with Pastor Peters about it, and, you know, fluoride's one of the things that, you know, makes males docile. It makes them controllable. And we talked about how, you know, they want it was basically herd management to keep a people enslaved and under control. And this is very exciting for me, because it's something that, you know, for to hear Pastor Peters talk about it for, you know, my whole life, and to hear my parents talk about it my whole life, to see some of this stuff that, you know, people thought you were crazy when you talked about they're poisoning us through the fluoride in the water.
Yep.
It's a byproduct from a DuPont factory that that they couldn't get rid of. And you tell them how bad this product is, and people, you know, they laugh at you, and it's good for your teeth. They do it for our teeth. And it's like they're gonna treat our water so everybody's got, you know, healthy teeth. When the song and dance, you know what everybody says about it and everything like that. But to see this one truth that we knew as a truth, that for it to be brought to light, and it's exciting.
It is exciting. And along those lines, you know, I just keep going back, and I'm smiling right now even thinking about it, is what's being brought to light is this long-term lie that's been told to us. And my mind immediately goes to, well, if they're admitting this lie, what are they going to admit next?
Exactly.
And, you know, because we know there's so many out there, and hopefully it just wakes up the folks, you know, that have bought the lie and the song and the dance, that this is good for us. And hopefully they feel, I just sound so crazy to say, but hopefully they feel betrayed and they begin to question everything else and seek out the truth.
Well, and is what I'm excited about too, is, you know, if they realize and okay, hey, we've been lied to, then maybe they'll start asking the question, who's been lying to us? who's behind these lies? Mm-hmm. You know, that's is it a group of people? What else have they lied about us, lied to us about? You know, maybe they're not God's chosen people. You know, who knows? But I'm encouraged by it, and I want and I hope everybody else out there is too, because it is exciting. We are, you know, times are changing.
I just had somebody in here the other day I was talking to, and they said, "Well, how do you know this or how do you know that?" And I said, "Well, look, the more in depth you get into this, I don't know. They call it a conspiracy, but a conspiracy is an unproven, you know, data point. But the first conspiracies were in the Bible when it said, you know, and the Jews conspired with the soldiers to say, well, they came and stole Christ's body away. That was a conspiracy. That was a national conspiracy. But anyways." When you begin to look at that and understand that it's very deep, it's very broad, and it's been going on for a very long time, like probably since the Garden. But when you understand all those things, what you can really get out of it is you can take away, and we've talked about it on here before, but they're saying again, is the fact that whatever you're hearing from lamestream, mainstream powers that be media is the fact that whatever they're telling you, you're probably going to be much more accurate if you believe exactly the opposite, you know. So it's like, and I told him that, and he was like, really? And I was like, yeah, I'm just telling you, if they say up, it's probably down, you know. I mean, you'll be a lot more accurate if you look at it that way.
Well,
Jason,
and moving
up on something that Tim just
go ahead.
I have one parting shot, Jason, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
That Tim said.
We got time.
Something that's exciting, going along with what Tim was just talking about, as far as you know, the things that are coming out that we've known to be truth, that our folks are now saying are truth. A reoccurring theme in the New Testament is, you know, we're told that people didn't speak out for the fear of the Jews. And, you know, when it comes to the persecution of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ, and I think that has been a weapon of the enemy of, you know, not speaking out for fear of the Jews, you know, of being labeled whatever the label is, right? A conspiracy theorist or white nationalist, white supremacist, whatever. And I think the tide is turning on that, where the fear of that group of people is going away, because we see in the mainstream now all the lies that have been told. It sure seems like that fear has subsided, and more people are speaking out against that power and that influence and that control. And all I can say to that is praise God. And I hope that continues, that we are being strengthened and empowered through the true God, our God, and that God continues to use these people that he's appointed to these places, not to be fearful, not to be living in a spirit of fear, but to speak the truth and to act on the truth. And I just think it's a great thing.
I do too. And I'm excited. I think that people are waking up to who they are, and waking up that we've got enemies. Maybe these are the enemies of Christ. I mean, I've heard more stuff on more podcasts where people have actually said stuff that would have been labeled anti-Semitic in the past, and it just simply is not. They don't get a label. They don't get called a hater. They don't get slandered for the things that they're saying. And to me, that's encouraging. I'm seeing more and more of it all the time. There's people that are talking about it. Yes, I agree. And that kind of moves us into, you know, ministry news and events. We got the Dragon Slayer newsletter printed yesterday. Richard finished up in the print shop yesterday, and that will go out on Monday. We'll get that in the mail, and then we'll be working on the online newsletter. And in there, you know, continuing on with, it's packed full. Stolen Birthright is the title of the main article. We continue on with knowing who our enemies are in spiritual warfare. And I think that has been, you know, it's just been in, it's volume four or V4 of that. And it is, it does a lot to show us who our enemies are, who the enemies of Christ are, and exposes them for their plots. And I'm encouraged by it, and you know, just encouraged that we got it printed. It's going to be in the mail. Let us know when you get it. If you'd like to receive that newsletter, we send it out free of charge. You can write to me through email, jason@sfaw.org, and just send me your address, and I'll get you added onto that list, and we'll make sure you get it. You can check it out at our website, scripturesforamerica.org. You can write to us at Scriptures for America, Post Office Box 766, LaPorte, Colorado, 80535. Just a truth-packed newsletter, and I guess is there's the infomercial for that. But do check it out. Some really good information there. I'm excited about it. Already working on Volume 5 and Volume 6. So do keep those efforts in your prayers, if you would, please. I would appreciate it. I know that there's a lot of time, energy, and effort and finances that go into getting these newsletters put together and shipped out, and couldn't do it without the prayers and the support of the faithful remnant, and do appreciate those that support us. We've got a new message by Brother Zach that will be recorded today, and the stuff that we've been putting up on Rumble and on Spotify has definitely been a hit. And those were definitely resources that I'm really glad that we were able to tap into and get the word out. Hearing from new people that have been listening in on Spotify and on Rumble, it seems like everybody's got their go-to platform that they like to use. I do like Spotify. I listen to Spotify a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts and stuff on there. And there's a lot of people that have been really happy with us putting these programs up. I try to get the coffee, like the one that you're listening to right now, I try to get that put up on Spotify right away, so that people can listen to it. I know there's a lot of people that have been, they've got it set up where Spotify comes on when, as soon as they get in their vehicle, and, there it goes, boom, there's a new episode of Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers, and, they're playing it on Spotify. Other people like Rumble. Other people are just going to our website. We've got everything archived at our website, scripturesforamerica.org. So you can check that out as well. But it's, there's a lot of work that goes into getting them on these other platforms, but it's been really good because we're reaching different groups of people. So I'm definitely encouraged by that.
Amen.
And closing out, I guess we're going to have prepper tip of the week. It's gardening season, and we'll just go through this real rapidly. But we'll go to you, Will. Gardening time. Any gardening tips? You're in a lot different climate than we are, so you're probably way ahead of this than we are.
Yeah, me and Josh could probably relate as far as the weather is concerned. But yeah, we got our gardens in everything. I got corn that's above my ankles right now and coming up already. And we're well into our spring garden and just thinking about this, that looking at all the hard work that we do and the taking care of what God has entrusted us with the resources is, you grow this stuff, and I was thinking about it this week, what are you going to do with it, right? And so I would just encourage people this week to, as you're tending your garden and as you're making your garden throughout spring, if you haven't started yet, just have a plan on what you're going to do with it, and as far as the preserving of it. And I know, Jason, maybe you can speak to some of the resources that the ministry has to offer, but educate yourself, right? It's kind of stair steps of learning how to garden and perfecting those skills. But the follow-up to that is making sure you have long-term provisions for your family, and that comes through developing those skills of preserving and canning and storing. And I just would encourage people to educate themselves, but more importantly, with that education, go out and apply it. That's what we need to be doing.
I agree 100%. And right now we're doing things a little bit different in our gardening situation because, well, we had snow this last week, so it's not the not the time to be gardening. But we do have we got starts in in trays that we've started from seed. We've got them in the shop. We've got lights going that to give them a start. And that's what in our short growing season, that's what we've got to do to be able to grow a good garden. Either have a greenhouse or have some place that you can start them in a window or get them started like that, and then transplant them outside when you think that the last frost is done, is basically when it warms up enough to where you think things are going to take off, and then you do a lot of praying and pray that you don't get a late frost or another snowstorm or something like that. But It is exciting, and it's something that's, you know, it's fun to do, it's good to do, it's learning experience, and it's hard work. And you know, our people were, you know, I think about, you know, Adam and his job, you know, tending the garden. And I think that it's something that you always get something out of it. It's good for our people to get their hands in the dirt and to get dirty and to sweat while you're doing it. A couple of the resources that we do have that are really good books is, one of them is Preserving Food Without Freezing or Canning, is a book that we offer. You can go to the bookstore online at scriptures4america.org. And Preserving Food Without Freezing or Canning offers more than 250 easy and enjoyable recipes featuring locally grown and minimally refined ingredients. It's a book that actually one of our listeners actually sent it to me and said, hey, you need to get this book. This is a phenomenal book. So was able to add that into our book collection. And another one is Beyond the Root Cellar. And this is a really good book. And it's, the guy was in Alaska and was basically built a root cellar so that he could preserve stuff and sell stuff throughout the year. And if you can do that in Alaska, you can do it just about anywhere in the United States. That's from what I would think. But it's a good book. It is, according to the publisher, it's one of their best sellers right now. And they've had to reprint it several times already. They didn't expect it to go as good as it did. A lot of really good information in there. And, you know, that's one thing, you know, we do a lot of canning, freezing. Of course, when you freeze stuff, you're dependent on a freezer. I like canning stuff. But you know, we do some freezing, of things as well. And it just, you know, you just got to figure out a way to do it and what you like and, you know, what you're going to use and what your family eats and what they like. So there's a lot that goes into it, but it is definitely a blessing when you can do that. And we are just about out of time. We'll go to closing thoughts, gentlemen.
So I would say to that point, to, you know, to do something, we've all evolved in how we look at things and do things, and there's all different thoughts and ideas and layers, but do something to set yourself up for tomorrow. You know, look ahead into the future and try to make some provision.
Amen.
Get engaged in what's going on around you. Grow, can, work, learn something new. I mean, we all want to be learning something new every day. If you're not dead, you should be trying to learn something new every day, or get going. Motivate yourself.
Do something. Yeah, do something. A little bit's better than nothing at all. And eventually it'll add up. So get out there and do something.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just encourage people, you do something and do it well. Whatever you do, do it like you're doing it unto the Lord, as we're commanded to do it. If you're going to work on your garden, do a good job at it and try to, you know, try to do it the best that you possibly can, whether you're you know, doing a garden or you're cleaning your gun or you're preparing for something, try to do a good job. I've been working with my children and trying to instill that into them. Whatever they do, I want them doing a good job at it. I want them to be, you know, to be proud of the work and the labors that they do. I was, you know, proud of my son the other day. He was over here, he was cleaning a rifle, and I walked over to it and I picked it up and I looked at it and I said, who cleaned this? And he said, I did. And I said, well, you did a good job on it. And I was looking for something wrong with it, and there wasn't. He did a good job. It took us a long time. It took us a long time to get to that point. There was, you know, it wasn't something that he got it right overnight, but when he got it, he got it. And, you know, when I told him he did a good job, you know, his face lit up. He had a big smile on his face. He was proud of the work that he did. And that's the way that we should be. When somebody looks at something that we did and somebody says, who did that? We should be able to say, I did that. I'm proud of that. And, you know, put my name on it. So I guess that's my closing thought. Go ahead, Will.
I,
I got one more. You just described our Christian walk with your son, that a little bit, you know, it didn't come overnight, that he worked and worked to perfect the art of cleaning a gun, and then the father told him, good job, job well done. And that's what we should be striving for in our Christian walk, is it's not an overnight experience. We should be working and be diligent at it, seeking out the guidance from the Holy Spirit so that we can get favor from our Father, and he'll say, well done.
Praise God. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for being here this morning. Folks, thanks for joining us. Remember, our website is scriptures4america.org.